Hello, everyone. I'm Heidi. You're listening to the DSG Connect podcast. I'm so happy to be here with you. We're helping elevate voices in dentistry by sharing inspiring stories straight from the dental experts. What is working, how to pivot when things go sideways, and everything in between. Wherever you find yourself listening today, thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me. Heidi.
Yeah, thanks, Heidi. And welcome, Dr. Lillis. Thank you for taking time out to jump in on this podcast and ever-changing time that we're faced with here today. But just 1 minute here, I want everybody to know we're grateful to have Dr. Lillis here today. He's a personal friend of myself and the family for many, many years. Not only just a terrific guy, but an incredible dentist. So what we wanted to do today is go through some of his best practices with digital dentistry. And really, I know we're in a tough time today in this world, but let's start looking forward into how to be more efficient with digital workflows. So that's going to be the basis of this conversation today. And again, Dr. Lillis, thank you for taking your time out. It's an honor to have this discussion with you. And Heidi, thank you for setting this up. So I'm just gonna kick it off with some basic questions, Dr. Lillis, and then we can dialogue from here. Sure. But the first one would be is, what digital platform do you utilize in your practice currently?
So John, the current intraoral scanner that we use is a Trio scanner. And then, you know, of course we have digital software for our Mac practice, and we have we have DEXIS for radiography, things like that. But I would say from the intraoral scanning perspective, we're using Trios currently in our workflows, and have for the last probably 4 to 5 years. Previous to that, we used the scanner from 3M. I think it was kind of a true definition scanner, and then it's kind of changed names over the years. But that's where we started off. And we started off with that roughly about 8 years ago.
That's awesome. You know, a lot of this transition we see is moving into digital dentistry, especially with accuracy, infection control, you know, all these different benefits of it. What are some best practices that you've developed with your digital platform? And give the audience a little bit about your digital journey. Like what made you go digital? How has it helped you? You know, take some time to bring these folks in, because we're going to have people that do not scan, are looking to scan, and currently are using an iOS machine. But take some time to expand on your journey into digital.
Yeah. Yeah, John, I think that's probably the best place to start, really, is our digital journey. Because, you know, I'm in my mid 40s, so I maybe smack dab in the middle of my career. And so when I was going through dental school and residency, digital wasn't around. I'm an analog dentist to start off with. So I made this switch roughly about 8 or 9 years ago. And to be truthful, I did it for all the wrong reasons. And I'll tell you why, because I was given a lecture. And I'm very blessed to have a lecture all over the country. And I was given a lecture in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And I could tell you, I remember like it was yesterday. And I think it was, like 9 or 10 years ago. So I show up for the lecture. And of course, in Wisconsin, they asked me, where do I want to put my computer? And the lecture was being hosted at the Labatt's Brewery. So in like the tasting room. So I put my laptop on the bar. I kid you not. So anyways, so I'm kind of cruising through the lecture, and about 3 or 4 of the dentists in there raised their hand and they said, hey, when are you going to start talking about digital impressions? And at the time, I think it was Sirona that they were using. I mean, CEREC was kind of like the first people out of the gates with digital. And I kind of looked at them and said, I'm not going to be having any of that today because I don't use digital. And I kid you not, the 3 dentists that were in the crowd literally got up and walked out of the lecture. So I was like, whoa. So on the plane ride home, I thought to myself, okay, we got to start really investing in digital, simply because I don't want to become irrelevant here on the lecture circuit. So that was the essentially, if you want to demarcate it, that was the start of our digital journey. And it has just been an absolute wild ride ever since then. And, you know, I started off very, very skeptical, to be truthful. I mean, the first probably 150 restorations that we did, we ran them alongside impressions. Talk about a crappy workflow. That's one of them, you know, where we were scanning the teeth and then taking an impression on top of it. So not efficient whatsoever, but, you know, people look to us for our opinions, and we want to make sure that we're giving them good sound advice and backed up by a lot of science. And so that's how we started doing it. So I was very skeptical, and I will tell you that now, 2020, I can't imagine practicing without our scanners and our technology. It's just literally been a game changer for us. And we'll get to it through the podcast, but that's how I started my digital journey for all the wrong reasons. And it's just been an incredible ride. And it is just so much fun now to do dentistry as far as this digital platform. I mean, I'll go on and on and on about it, but that's essentially where we started.
That's great. I wish I was a fly on the wall for that lecture.
It was wild. I mean, that happened at 8:30 in the morning, right? And I mean, talk about a rough start. I was like, wow, this is going to be an interesting day.
tough crowd in lacrosse.
Apparently, Wisconsin's supposed to be nice people. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
So that's what are some of, you know, as you jumped into digital, what are some of the hiccups that you found with integrating it into your practice? And talk about a little bit of your staff and how your staff plays a role into that.
Yeah, good question. I mean, first and foremost, digital is not 100% perfect. I think everybody needs to kind of understand that. And it's not a panacea where you're going to wave a magic wand and everything is going to be okay. Because, you know, the manufacturers will tell you that, will give you the truth. But that's one thing I kind of start off with people saying, like, okay, I'm going to get a scanner and everything is just going to be 100% better. And I tell them that's not exactly the case, but a lot of things are going to be better. But what it's meant to our practice, so what did I first find out? Because I kind of go back to, okay, when did we first start scanning and what did I see out of the gates? And what I saw was the first thing I saw was my marginal integrity of my restorations was better. So I'm very blessed to have my own lab technicians and have forever. And so we work with our technicians for a long time. They're very, very highly skilled people. They're very conscientious. They really work hard at what they do. And we were taking impressions in custom trays. And I'll tell you that at first I was saying, I'm not really having a problem. So why would I ever switch to digital? And that was like before the whole lecture debacle came on. And so what I found is that the first couple of restorations I got back, the marginal integrity was just, it was better. The margins were better. The contacts were better. The occlusion was literally spot on. And so I found out that my seats were going a lot quicker. So that's what I first found is that, you know, one restoration dropped in, the second one dropped in, the third one dropped in. And then, you know, I was going from like 20 minute seats down to like 15 minute seats, down to 10 minute seats. And now we're down to about 5 minute seats without anesthetic, of course. If you have to do a little anesthetic, it takes a little bit longer. But, and we went from, you know, we looked at we track our remakes because every time we do a remake, essentially the profit goes down in our practice. So we started tracking that. And what we started to see is our remakes were literally coming down dramatically. We didn't have a lot of remakes to start off with. We worked pretty hard at what we were doing with our impression techniques and that. But we started to see the remakes started to come down. So the time got more efficient. Remakes went down and marginal integrity was better. And so that's what I started to find out in year one. And that was on the single to two tooth restorations. And then we started to get a little bit more in complex care as far as that. We'll probably get into that later, but that's initially what we saw from a staff standpoint. You asked about staff. That's really big because what I found is my staff went from not complacency. They were a little bit, not that they were totally complacent, but they're kind of bored a little bit. I mean, we kind of, you know, we have a lot of systems. We only do fixing or removable prostatectomies in our practice. So it's very, very, very highly specialized. But the staff started to get kind of a little bit bored and this and that. But when we went to digital, we saw team members just like their eyes lit up and they really started to really gravitate and really love the technology. And then patients started getting really excited. You know, I mean, you pull that screen down in front of them and you show them that you're scanning their teeth. That's been a real game changer for us. So, you know, our staff started to get more engaged. Our patients became more engaged. I started to get more engaged because I'm like a kid in the candy store. I love technology. So I just think it's a blast. But at the same token, I don't love technology so much that if it's going to make me inefficient or not profitable, I don't like it that much. So, you know, that's what we kind of saw from our staff standpoint. That's kind of what we saw in the initial stages, is that everything was just kind of going pretty smoothly. I mean, things were dropping in, staff was getting excited, and there was just an overall general and more enthusiasm within the practice in the office.
Great examples of efficiency and stepping the practice up. Along those lines, I wanted to just a follow-up dialogue question to that I listened to that you said is, how did your treatment planning change or case acceptance? You know, you talk about accuracy, engagement, but talk about the treatment planning aspect of the digital journey, digital platform.
Yeah, so let's talk about two things there, that and then talk about, you know, case acceptance. What I found and what I wasn't really expecting was return on investment from a standpoint of case acceptance and patients kind of wow experience. That I wasn't anticipating that. And what I mean by that is that, you know, on every new patient that comes in our practice, we do a records appointment, and part of that records appointment, it would be diagnostic casts. So when you have somebody that's new to the practice and they're new to you and you're scanning their teeth and they're seeing it in color, in person, right in front of their face on a screen, the patient wow factor just goes up. So I can't say that that directly affects case acceptance, but I think it does. You know, I mean, I don't have any metrics to say this definitely does, but we saw that our case acceptance went up by about 13 to 14% since we went digital, which is a pretty significant number if you think about it. So again, are our presentation skills got better? Is our workflows better? I don't know, but I think a lot of it's attributed to that. And then from a diagnosis standpoint, how we, you know, if we're doing a reconstructive case where we're opening vertical dimension, or we're doing a cosmetic case, we're doing a bunch of veneers, or if we're just fixing two front teeth, everything now is scanned and then mocked up, and the patient has to approve it before we start. So from a diagnosis standpoint, it got a lot better. And we can do that. We can do all those workflows in probably 30 to 45 minutes. Where it used to take a laboratory technician 2 days to do a full mouth wax up correctly, you know, but now we can scan and we can do all that within an hour or two. Talk about, you know, efficiency standpoint. And then when you show patients befores and afters on that, and they see where I can see where I'm going to end before I start. That's a game changer. I mean, a total game changer, not only for me, but for my patients. So yeah, the diagnosis, that was something that came in later, John. You know, at first when we started doing digital, we were scanning teeth. We're making crowns, single to two teeth, quadrant dentistry. Then we started to cross the arch. Then we started to do virtual wax ups. And so, you know, we got in on that a long time ago before it's become in vogue. And now we're doing virtual wax up and we're merging it with CBC technology. I mean, it's just going like a bottle rocket right now. So much better than we used to do. So, you know, if you take a look at the traditional workflow, how we used to do it. So let's say that you're dealing with a patient that's going to be, you know, maybe 6 to 10 restorations or something like that, even maybe 4 restorations. What was the workflows are the same, right? So you took impressions, you took a face bow, you did a leaf gauge, and you got their, you know, there's different philosophies. I'm not going to get into that, but you got a bite, you got a CR record, however you wanted to do it. And then you put it in a box and you sent it to the lab. The lab would then unbox it, put it in the articulator, hand get wax out, start changing the wax patterns, this and that. And that took them, you know, that took them a day to 2 days in the laboratory, right, to get all that done. And then they send it back to us, and then we had to be super careful not to chip the wax. You know, we had to make, we couldn't make suck down matrices out. We had to make duplicate models. All that stuff we did. Now, what does that look like? Well, it looks like a scan, right? We take a bite, and then we send it off to the laboratory for virtual articulation, and then the technician can produce a mock-up within probably, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 minutes. So what used to take 2 days, now it takes 20 minutes. And then the technicians will send it back to us with video recordings of how they did the mock-up. And then we show that to our patients. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, it really, truly is. I mean, it's a real game changer as far as diagnosis and treatment planning goes.
That's awesome, Dr. Lillis. You know, I've been grateful and lucky to be able to be at your practice a few times and really see the, you know, the methodicalness, the professionalism, the microscopes, right? that's rare to see in a prosthetic practice, but in any dental practice. But, you know, I think something that you touch on is when I was at your practice was I'm not talking to somebody about number 30, right? I'm showing somebody a digital picture of their mouth and we're having a conversation of where they want to go next. So instead of it being a mystery, you're pulling it up onto the screen and having a more in-depth conversation about reality, right? Not number 30, not cord, not we're going to do a veneer or whatever. Digital, I saw and I listened, helps you get layman terms with your patients when you talk to them. So I thought that was something that was unique and cool to hear. But let's, if you don't mind, I'd want to get into maybe one product process that, you know, we talked about the diagnostics, efficiencies, crowns, you know, moving into more complex restorations like single unit dental implants, right? What has that been like for you? Starting from the beginning, you know, back in the day it was put on a closed tray or open tray impression coping or put on an abutment and impress those things. How have you seen your practice move in the better with scan bodies and digital implant dentistry?
Yeah, so, you know, let's talk about posterior versus anterior workflow then for just a second, cool. Right? So if we look at posterior workflow, let's say that to me is gonna be your bread and butters, right? I mean, that's gonna be a majority of the implants that are gonna be out there. And that's probably, honestly, the most profitable thing you're going to do in your practice. I mean, when we lecture, people always say, like, well, you know, what's the most profitable thing you do in a dental practice? You know, full mouth reconstruction is 28 crowns, open vertical dimension. No, that's not it. The most profitable thing you can do in your practice is tooth number 18 or 19, 30, 31, 2 or 3, right? Because that's going to be bread and butter dentistry. And what did it look like before digital is, you know, we would, the patient would come back, we'd unscrew the healing abutment, we'd put the impression cylinder in there, we'd take an impression, put the healing abutment back, put it in a box, send it to the laboratory, and they send us, you know, they send us the restoration of the abutment back. Nothing wrong with that workflow. It works very, very well. It's been around a long time, and we ourselves in our practice have done that a lot. What does it look like now? Well, it's a lot more efficient. And what I mean by that is now the patient comes in, you know, well, let's rewind it a little bit more from that though, John. Back in the day, we were doing a lot of the beta testing for some scannable abutments back before we even broached the subject. So we would then scan those abutments. Those were scannable abutments in the mouth. The restorations were made in the laboratory. And then we'd come back and put those in. What it looks like now is the assistant will essentially, I don't see the patient for more than about 5 minutes. And I mean by that is that the assistant will scan the arches. She'll do all the pre-scanning. And then they kind of buzz me. And when I come in, And some manufacturers will have a scannable abutment, so I don't even have to do anything. I just have to literally scan the scannable abutment and scan the bite, and then I'm out of there. Some manufacturers, they make you unscrew that and then screw a scannable abutment in. So I have to unscrew the healing abutment, put the scanning abutment in, scan that, and then put the healing abutment back on. So, and then again, get the occlusion, and then they're out of there. So a lot of it is probably 75% of it is assistant driven and 25% of it is me. So from an efficiency standpoint, it really has cut down on the time that we're spending on doing the restoration. So we can scan all that in probably 5 minutes total, if you think about it. And then that's just the front part of it. Then they come back and it's time for the restoration to be delivered. And that is really where digital, I've seen, has been a game changer. I mean, we're essentially, everything's screw retained in the posterior for us. So we have screw mentable restorations, meaning the crown and the abutment are cemented in the laboratory. And then we essentially screw that restoration down. And we're literally, John, and I'm not kidding you, we're not touching them. We're literally not touching them. The tissue displacement, the contacts, the occlusion, the excursive movements, everything is dialed in on those. So those are about 5 minute seats. And the majority of the time is me covering the screw access hole. So, you know, like I said, it's just, it's really gotten to that point. And I always kind of say this with trepidation that, you know, nothing's a panacea, but we're really to that point for single to two tooth restorations on implants. It's really gotten very predictable and very efficient. So that's what we're seeing.
That's great. Awesome. You touched on something that I wanted, that is a huge question that we receive at the lab is, and I want you to expand, I want to get your input, is when should I do a screw retained single unit versus a cement retained? And on top of that is, should I use a custom abutment or prefabricated abutment? We're still getting these types of questions. So, talk a little bit more about when you do a screw retained or when you feel like it's the best clinical option, and then why you do CAD custom design versus prefabricated abutments.
Yeah, good question. So we screw retain every single thing we can. So if you ask us, we're going to go into each case saying we're going to screw retain this restoration until we can't. So, and now with digital planning, which at some point, maybe in a lecture, we'll go over how to do that with planning the case out with the CBCTs and our surgeons and mock-ups before the case has even started. We feel that we can do that the majority of the time. Now, there's outliers out there, right? I mean, we may not have bone enough to do those things, but we're trying to plan that out ahead of time. So if you ask us, we're going to screw retain every single thing we can. And there's a myriad of reasons for that. Number one is I don't want any cement down the interface of the implant. The hydrostatic forces of the cement can kind of put it down inside the implant. And even if we're really careful with our cement technique, I just don't trust it as much as because I can screw retain that and I can just go to sleep at night knowing that there's no cement anywhere around that implant. I'm 100% confident of that. So we like that a lot. Even in the anterior region is where you run into problems. You run into problems with cement versus screw retain. But now a lot of manufacturers have done angle screw channels. And that has really been a game changer because now we know that we can angle correct things and we can still screw retain the restoration and we can stay away from cement. It's not that we, you know, never say never, always say sometimes, right? So, but rarely anymore do we wind up in a non-screw retain situation. Custom versus stock abutments. You know, this kind of comes up too. Every once in a while, I'll get this on the lecture circuit. And I always tell everybody that I don't know where this is coming from because we just have always used custom abutments. And I mean, you guys are in the laboratory, you have a better handle on pricing than I do, but I just think that the pricing has kind of come to the point now where it's almost virtually the same. And, you know, we can get into this huge dialogue on custom abutments and why you want to use them. But at the end of the day, we can do anything we want with a custom abutment. We can make it tall. We can make it short. We can make it fat and wide. We can skinny it up. We have total control over the case, and every case is totally different. So I always use custom abutments all the way even back into residency days with UCLA abutments because of the versatility and the customization that we can get. And I'll tell you that custom abutment has saved our bacon on many occasions. So, you know, that's the thing I don't understand, I guess. Maybe I'm the wrong person to ask about stock abutments because we just have never used them, because custom abutments were maybe just a little bit more expensive, but we always felt they were worth it. And now the price is pretty negligible. I think it's almost the same, isn't it? I mean, I don't know. You know more than I do.
Yeah, no, Dr. Lillis, it actually, at some points, it becomes more money with a stock abutment. So when we touch that, and then remakes, right? And angulation. So the market now is become null and void with that cost effectiveness when you add in chair time. And really, CAD specific restorations, I mean, that we've got it so dialed in now, right? It's not a $900 UCLA waxed and gold cast product. These mills and these accuracy of the designs are just incredible, but it's amazing that we still continue to get these conversations, right? And there are times where if somebody has a straight up and down number 30 and they have a prefabricated abutment, we can go ahead and go that route and save a few dollars. But typically your everyday case has tissue depth, has angulation and occlusion height issues. So anyway, great points there. And sorry to throw those onto you. You know, I thought we were past that, right? With the lab holders, the old 3i lab holders, putting the abutment on and whittling it down. But
well, if you think about it, that's all we had. I mean,
that's right.
Back when we first started this whole implant dentistry gig, all we had were stock abutments. I mean, customized abutments didn't come into the UCLA abutments. So
yeah,
you're right. We've come a long ways, haven't we, since those days. So
it's been cool.
Yeah.
What I want to ask one more question and make a few more questions. But what is your scan body of choice? What scan body do you find best in your hands?
As far as a certain manufacturer or?
Yeah, typically an implant case comes in. When you think digital scan body, where do you go to? You know, do you go to the original manufactured scan body of that company, or do you use the three shape scan bodies or desks or, you know, what?
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. So we typically use whatever system it is. We use their scan body. Now, that can be a really bad idea. It can be a good idea. I don't know. I just try to kind of keep everything simple. You know, referral-based practice, we have to restore everything that comes underneath the roof. So we generate quite a bit of inventory over the years as far as scan bodies and impression cylinders and whatnot. But we will always typically go manufacturer-specific. So let's say it's a Nobel implant, and we're restoring number 19, we'll use an ELO scan body from Nobel. If it's a dense supply implant in site 19 or 20 or whatever, we'll then use their scan bodies. I just kind of always did that, honestly, to keep it simplistic. And we work with a handful of surgeons anyways, most for the majority. And the majority of our marketplace is driven by only like two or three systems. So we kind of have accumulated scan bodies over the years. And the nice thing about a scan body is that it can be used over and over and over and over again. So we just kind of accumulated and we use those. But, you know, that's posterior workflows. John, when we get into anterior workflows, again, we use the same scan body, but we're taking a scan now of a customized soft tissue. So the temporary restoration has driven that. And then the scan body comes in and these scanners can get down 7-8 millimeters and it can take a customized quote unquote impression like we used to. We can do the same thing with the scanner. So the technician now knows all of the soft tissue elements involved with that. So it's different between anterior and posterior is what I'm trying to get at, but we always use manufacturer specific scan bodies. We don't deviate from that. Now I know you can, I mean, I know there's others, there's Implant Direct, I think, has their scan bodies. I mean, 3Shape has their own scan bodies and things of that nature. But we've just kind of stayed with that. And I guess it's just working. So we're just going to keep doing it.
That's great clarification. Again, we get those questions all the time is, John, what scan body should I use? And as a DSG and as a representative of the network, we always drive that clinician to use that OEM or a custom specific product to that implant, right? It's just predictable. There's support. So we, you know, we think just like you with that. And then there are other cases that might, the system might not have a scan body. So, but that seems to be a very, very popular question with digital implant dentistry. So great clarification.
Yeah, and I think like when you look at, if you want to expand that a little bit, I think you're seeing that with abutments too, right? I mean, you use manufacturer specific abutments and you can get into that arm wrestling for a little bit. I personally think that if I try to save a few bucks here or there by not using specific abutments for that manufacturer, it can come back and bite me in the rear end down the road because chair time is gold, right? So if I saved $150 on the restoration because I used something other than an OEM, yeah, I won a little bit initially. Like I won the battle, but I kind of may have lost the war. Because if that restoration pops off down the road or we have some issue with screw loosenings or something of that nature, now all of a sudden that's taking more chair time up and, you know, we're having to reappoint the patient, set them all up, accessing the access holes, tighten the screw back down, you know, dealing with complications is really what we're trying to avoid going forward. So again, we saved a few bucks, but I think we lose a lot in the end with those complications that we have to mitigate like down the road.
That's great. That's a great way to expand on that nicely. Thank you for doing that. Dr. Lillis, I just want to say thank you. You know, it's been really refreshing having this dialogue in about digital dentistry, how it's been efficient for you and really been a game changer and how you currently use it in your practice. For many reasons, but you know, it's been great to get off the topic of COVID, which is a reality today and that we're involved in. But I appreciate your friendship and your honesty and your professionalism. I mean, it's and more importantly, your friendship again is awesome with the family. And I'm glad you're safe. Glad everybody's safe here. But moving on to this and closing it out, what do you see dentistry looking like once we get through this time, this period of time that we're in?
Well, John, as you know, dentistry is all about relationships, right? I mean, it's about relationships and mentorship. And I think that'll never change. I think the more relationships that we can have in dentistry and the more mentorships we can achieve in our profession leaves it at a better place than where we started. And, you know, I always think back when I first started, you know, I mean, gosh, was it 15 years ago? I think I did my first lecture out in your neck of the woods, right? For a periodontist in Boston. And I remember being super nervous. And before I even hit the door, the periodontist said, "Oh, don't worry about it. Dr. Rule, your dad, he says you're the greatest speaker that's ever been around and you're like the new up and coming guy." And I never met your dad day one, right? So, but then, you know, soon after that I met him and, you know, just really started listening to what he did and how he ran his practice and really tried to emulate that. And I will strongly encourage all the younger dentists to really do that, really reach out to that, especially in this time going forward. I know it's really stressful when you have student loan debt and you got practice debt, and that can seem insurmountable at times. And I can tell you that because I've been there. However, I wasn't there during a pandemic like we are now. And I wasn't there having to spend 6, 8, sometimes 12 weeks out of my office. So it can be very, very scary, but the one thing that'll stay consistent is the relationships and mentorship. So I always encourage all dentists to do that. And especially even if you're at your mid part of your career and you're thinking about changing some certain things and going different directions, continue to reach out to all those people out there and say, hey, how are you doing this? Share best practices. So I think that's really important today going forward. How is dentistry going to look, to be truthful? I don't know. And I don't think any, I think anybody tells you this is what it's exactly going to look at day one when we go back to our practices, I think that they're not being honest. And being, you know, being in the Midwest, I can tell you that about honesty is about all we have sometimes, because we don't have any mountains or oceans or anything like that. So I always tell my patients, you know, the only thing I can give you is honesty, and you may not like what I have to tell you, but it's going to be the truth. And, you know, a lot of people in our area kind of gravitate towards that. They just want the truth. And so what's the practice is going to look like when we go back? I don't know. I think we're naive to think that we're going to turn the light switch on and every single patient that we was in a treatment plan or had case accepted was going to immediately go into treatment. I think that's a little naive, but I think it's going to look like a three-way light switch. I think we're going to like turn 50% of our practices on. And that's kind of what we're planning right now in our team. And I'll tell you, a big part of our practice now is, or a bigger segment of is not only lecturing, but consulting. And when we're talking to our docs, we're having these conversations with them. And I always say, this is what we're going to do in our practice. And then in the consulting world, we kind of say, you know, you're welcome to emulate it. But what we're thinking about doing, John, is we're thinking about opening 50% of the practice up initially. And we're going to do that like week one. So it's going to look like half days. And then after that, we'll probably open up 75% of the practices, 75% of the practice in week two. And then our hopes are that we'll probably be 100% at week four. And what is that 100% going to look like? Is our production going to be exactly the same as it was in March before we left? No, it's not. But it may. And we just don't know. And I think that's the biggest thing. But I'll tell you, here's the common thread, is I think now more than ever, efficiency in your practice and systems are going to be very, very, very crucial. And what do I mean by that? Now's the time in practices, if we have somebody out there that doesn't had a lot of consulting, they don't really know, they don't have very good systems, they've never looked at an annual plan, they've never looked at their budget, they don't know what their overhead is. I think now is the time to get a hold of that. So if you've ever thought about doing that, now's the time to do it, because efficiency is going to be key. And what I mean by that is going out and make sure your systems are rock solid and ironclad, because we can't afford to waste a lot of time. We've already had a lot of time off, so we got to get up and running. And when I've heard these in these continuing education forums in the last couple of weeks talking about getting back quickly. And I think that that's okay. We can get back quickly, but we have to make sure it's done correctly. And I think honestly, connecting with the patient emotionally, really truly listening to what they want, one patient at a time, one case at a time, and then dialing in, meeting those motivators and concerns and dialing in the dentistry according to what they want. Are we gonna do, you know, I take a look at 08-09, we didn't do a whole lot of veneer cases back then, but we made a lot of dentures. And it is what people could do, it's what they could afford. And so we did a lot of dentures that year. It was nothing crazy. It was nothing that, you know, I can present in front of 500 dentists and show them how awesome this case was, but it paid the bills and it was a good service and people were happy with it. And then you'll have some people that have money and they're coming in saying, hey, listen, I've been pent up for 6 weeks. I now want to move forward with this case. And so I think we have to really dial into each patient, figure out where they are, tell them the truth, be honest, and then go with what they want to go with and give them different options. That's one. Two, efficiency is going to be key. And, you know, digital does that for us. I mean, we're able to scale up or scale down as quickly as we want to. So I think that's going to be really, really important is dialing those efficiencies and decreasing the remakes that we have. I mean, really, because we don't have a lot of time to waste. We've already essentially wasted all the time we've had being out for 6 to 8 to 12 weeks. So I think COVID post-COVID practice is going to be a lot of different things. But I think if you want to look at a common denominator, I think it's just those two topics, you tell them the truth, you're being honest, you're meeting them where they are, and then you're dialing in your systems and getting super efficient. And it's not, I don't think dentists need to panic if they haven't done it. Now's the time to really do it. If you've ever thought about getting a hold of your systems and your overheads and figuring out this, that, or whatever, you know, now's the time to really get to really do that. And I could not imagine my practice without my mentors and my consultants. I just couldn't. I'm not that smart enough, John, to have, you know, my practice dialed in like that without their help. And so I would encourage every dentist out there to start really engaging those relationships. And a lot of them already have it. They're already reaching out to them. They're always saying, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing? This and that. And it's going to be based on community by community. What it looks like in Kansas City, what it looks like in New York City are going to be two different animals. So I think it's important that we engage with our community dentists as well as our mentors across the nation. So that's just kind of, that's my little tangent as far as what does it look like. I think that's what it kind of looks like. And I think there's a lot of unknown, and unknown creates a tremendous amount of stress, and I get it. But I look at our systems and we're just tweaking them right now. We're reforecasting our numbers. We're, you know, meeting with our team, and our team is engaged in those numbers, by the way, and we're keeping them engaged in those, and then really just truly dialing in with our patients, making sure they're okay. And we're going to meet them where they are and just kind of go with it. We're just going to ride the wave like we did back in 08, 09.
Great recap, Dr. Lillis. I mean, wow, that was amazing. So there's one thing I take out of this is obviously friendship, mentorship, but one thing dental does and continues to do is be stronger together, right? We seem to be one family, whether it's a lab or dentist, surgeon. These times show how strong we are together. So I appreciate your time. We've got a webinar coming up with you Friday, I believe. We're going to push that out to our entire customer base. And let's close it up, Heidi, with some final thoughts from you. And again, we'll be back in touch with you, Dr. Lillis, and maybe we'll get on another topic. But thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Hey. Yeah. Hey, thanks, John and Heidi, for having me here. And, you know, these podcasts are extremely therapeutic as more so as clinical information. So they've been really good. And I'm really proud of DSG and what you guys, and I always said DSG was always a big company with a heartbeat. And I think that's true more now than ever. So yeah, I can't thank you enough for all that you guys are doing at the laboratory, as well as doing these podcasts and continuing education and trying to be at the forefront and make a real big difference in our profession. So hats off to you and all your team.
Thank you so much. Thank you both of you today for hopping on with us and discussing. And one of the things that you just said was that we have a huge heart and at DSG, and we feel that the dental community, the people, are the heartbeat of the dental community. And so thank you for being part of our extended family. I feel honored today to sit with you both. And I feel like, you know, just getting to listen in on two guys, two friends, just having a real honest conversation, you know, sitting here with coffee and talking about dentistry. So what a treat, what a break from everything that's going on. Thank you both so much. And we do look forward to having you back. Have a great day, you guys.
Thanks, Heidi.
Thank you. Bye, Heidi.
Thank you for listening. If you like today's podcast, subscribe on iTunes or Spotify. And please help us spotlight this podcast by taking a minute to review, as well as give us a shout out on all the socials. Stay connected at dentalservices.net or by emailing us at podcast@dentalservices.net. We believe we're stronger together. Until next time, enjoy your day.